Hello, everyone. This is Spence with the 5 Minute Bark Podcast, here today with Dr. Steve Darrington of Darrington Orthopedics Interventional Sports and Spine. Now, it is a pleasure to have him here today. Actually, I have known Dr. Steve Darrington here for a while. We met on a plane back from a business trip and actually had him with another company before he joined us. And we are very glad that he decided to join the trip with us. And he's been a pleasure every single step of the way. So, Doctor, pleasure to have you on.
Spence, thanks for having me, man. Kind of interesting how we first got connected, but I think a lot of times things like that happen for a reason, and it's been really good. So like you said, I'm a physician with Darrington Orthopedics. The full practice name is Darrington Orthopedics Interventional Sports and Spine, and we can get into what that means. Website darringtonortho.com. I'm on social media at SoCal Stem Cell Doc on Instagram, Facebook. This is fun. Happy to be on here with you.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you very much again for coming on. Now, do me a favor here before we get started, because I know that if I try to do any more further explaining on it, I will probably screw something up. But what exactly is it that you do with stem cell research? I know that you work in the industry. It's kind of something that's a little hazy to not only myself, but a lot of the people in, I think, America and the world. And so if you could do me a favor and kind of narrow down exactly what you do with it, and the kind of part of it that you work with.
Sure. So that's a great question. And that's something, stem cells are, it sounds great. And it's something that gets thrown around a lot as almost a panacea that can fix everything. But, there's different places where stem cells can come from, especially in the US. There's some things you can do with stem cells legally, and there's some things that you're not allowed to do. So I'm part of an organization called Regenex, REGENEXX.com. I'm part of an affiliate network of physicians, that there's, I think there's 60 plus clinics around the country, and some internationally that, basically utilize the research and the registry, information that they've been collecting on patients over the last 16 years. There's over 100,000 patients that have been treated over that time. And for anybody that consents to be part of that registry, we get information on them before and after procedures to really get a better understanding of what's working, what's not working, what kind of conditions are able to be treated well and what things don't do as well. So we use a number of different things as part of these treatments. And sometimes it is using stem cells. A lot of times it's from the bone marrow. So basically from the back part of our hip joint. I don't like saying hip, but that's what most people kind of describe it as. It's actually the pelvis. But that's a place that stem cell numbers are very plentiful. It's easily accessible. The process of taking those is relatively comfortable. And it's really the only true stem cell procedure that's allowed in the United States right now. There are some adipose or fat procedures that you can do, but they're not really true stem cell procedures as they're allowed to be done in the United States. And one of the things that gets, I think, most confusing to people about stem cells is that they may have heard, their chiropractor, their primary care doc, even the orthopedic surgeon saying, "Oh, I've got stem cells in a vial that I can give you. They are young and vibrant and the best thing ever, and yours are old and tired and aren't going to work." The issue is with the way that those are processed from not only getting them, which is usually from some kind of a birth tissue source. So that would be umbilical cord or amniotic fluid or Wharton's jelly, or there's all kinds of different sources. But when it goes from that initial getting it to processing it, to getting it into that vial and then shipping it to the doctor's office and then thawing it really, really quickly, none of those cells that may have been alive at the beginning are actually alive. And there's been several publications showing that. So it's a big point of confusion. So we've really focused on what you're allowed to do legally in the US, and we've got research data, not only from the basic sciences, but also to clinical outcomes and a couple of randomized controlled trials, showing, our outcomes. So, yeah, there's a lot to it, and we could have the entire podcast be about that. But I hope that's a good kind of overview, for patients. And it's a good place to kind of say, hey, maybe I need to do a little more research, you know, from when someone around the corner said, I got this great stem cell procedure that was really, that got just around the corner.
Awesome. So there is a lot of information that goes along with this. And clearly with Regenix and also with what you're working on there, you guys have a lot of research that backs it up. And that's really the thing that I think a lot of people don't do the time and due diligence on, is making sure that where they're getting it done and exactly what's happening during the process is actually researched. So what is, like, typically, I know you said, like, the guy down the street, when he says that he's got a stem cell procedure, that you kind of turn your head and question it. How often are you seeing misinformation being presented when it comes to stem cells, and, you know, the kind of presentation of it in America?
Unfortunately, I think it's pretty rampant, and a lot of people will call this kind of the Wild West of stem cells, just because it's honestly hard for the FDA to manage this. And there's some point of allowing us to be doing things that are probably not harmful, but probably beneficial or potentially beneficial, and giving us some flexibility. But some people abuse that, and the FDA probably in the fall is going to be coming down with trying to really regulate some of this a little bit better, just because it is kind of all over the place. And I like to think that the people down the street, like I was kind of saying, that are offering these, very easy, viable, in a vial, quote, stem cell injections, I don't think they're purposely misleading people. I think they honestly just don't know what they don't know. And unfortunately, they're offering things that are being misrepresented for what they are. So
it's almost really more dangerous.
If you're looking at getting a treatment like this, you need to make sure that the person that's doing it, really knows what they're talking about, and, has the knowledge, to be able to direct you with what thing works the best. Cause, like I mentioned, a couple of things that I use in my treatments, and which one is most appropriate depends on a number of factors. And if you just kind of dabble in this, or you have someone who's not even a physician doing these injections, they probably don't have the knowledge base to really inform you well enough about what your best options are.
So in terms of the treatments and everything, you said you have you have a lot of patient outcomes. You have a lot of research based on Regenix and kind of your past history. You have a lot of research there. Now, how do you know how they're doing after procedures? Are you checking up on them? Are you doing kind of more long-term? What's, like, the procedure there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, for me personally, with all of my patients, I'm following up with them, several weeks after their procedure. They always have my personal contact information, phone, email, and they can reach out any sooner if they need to. But I'm checking up with them, several weeks after the procedure and helping to guide their rehabilitation, whether they're doing that independently or with a physical therapist or a trainer, and really keeping that direct personal touch points with myself. But as part of that registry, we've got a whole staff of people that are reaching out to these patients at different time points afterwards, asking them several different questions, having them fill out validated questionnaires that are answering, functional questions. What kind of things can you do, compared to, before, compared to afterwards? What's your pain levels? What's your overall, difference from where you were before? And we track those patients for several years. We've got on our website, 4 years out following these patients. And sometimes these patient numbers are very high for areas that we treat more commonly. So it gives patients a little bit more of an understanding of, how is this actually working, in real terms. I've heard patients that said they went to, that kind of guy down the street, and they told them, oh, this works on 95% of people, works on 100% of people. It's like, well, what is that based off of? There's no data that they're drawing from. They're just saying, well, I think most of my patients do well, or, I can think of three people, so I guess they all did well. I mean, it's not really accurate. That's not how research works. There's anecdotes, and there's saying, hey, I got this star patient that's doing amazing. And that's powerful, but, you have to be able to look at numbers in a little bit, or look at patients in bigger numbers to really know how often is this really working? And you know, how are you actually determining what's working, what's not?
Yeah, and so that kind of raises the question. Typically, when you're treating people here, are you seeing that the recovery time when you do these stem cell treatments is shorter, longer, the same? And is it more on the fact of it's more effective, it's faster? What is it about stem cells that's so appealing to everybody?
Well, yeah, especially comparing to what most people are facing as their other option is some kind of surgery. And it might be a quote, minor surgery, like a rotator cuff repair or a micro discectomy or a meniscectomy where they're cutting out parts of your meniscus. But there's trauma that goes along with that. There's tissue damage that goes along with that. And there's a longer recovery with those kind of procedures. And unfortunately for older people, it tends to be not the simple procedures, but it's bigger surgeries like knee and hip replacements or back fusions or laminectomies and other things that don't sound like something that you want to get. And those recoveries can be much, much longer. And, unfortunately, I see patients and try to provide some treatments for them that have longstanding issues that don't go away after the surgery. And sometimes these are new things that come afterwards. So, you know, the recovery time is one of the things that's really advantageous, where we're talking a matter of weeks to maybe a couple months versus, 6 to 9 months, which is oftentimes experienced after traditional orthopedic surgeries.
Yeah. I mean, I think you remember here, I've had about 4 labrum surgeries. Last one was basically reconstructive on multiple different parts, 2 centimeters of my AC joint cut out. And that recovery was, I would say, a solid year and a half to 2 years before I was fully 100% recovered. And when you talk about weeks or a month or two, that it makes me cringe, man. I only wish at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunately, one of the things with surgeries, you can't undo it. Right. And, I think you've had kind of some off and on issues with that shoulder even since the recovery. I got a guy, I just emailed back from 2 days ago. He had a previous labral surgery. He had an AC joint surgery, a couple different things on his shoulder. He's a pretty high level golfer. He's 4 months out now from a stem cell procedure. And he told me he's hitting in the 60s. He's like, I haven't golfed this well in several years. So he's one of those guys where, if this was another surgery, which his surgeons even told him wasn't even a great option because they were kind of running out of things to cut away. He'd still be recovering versus he's back on the golf course and shooting some good scores.
So now we're talking about shoulders. What other treatments does this work for? Right. You've mentioned meniscus, you mentioned shoulder. What treatments do you use it for? What are the different body parts? What are the different treatments? What goes on with it?
Sure. So, really I treat anything head to toe, shoulders to fingers, hips, all the way to the toes. It really works for most orthopedic areas, anywhere that you have a joint with cartilage, anywhere you have ligaments and tendons, other soft tissues, like you mentioned, labrum, which are in the hip and in the knee, hip and in the shoulder, and then meniscus in the knee. It works really for most of those areas. The most common thing that we see and treat, just because they're the most common injuries, are knee and back problems, and shoulders aren't too far behind. But we're able to successfully treat and get most patients pretty significant improvement for really any joint, any area of the spine, to be that alternative and get you back to the stuff that you've been struggling to do, which usually is what leads them into my office or leads them into the surgeon's office.
Absolutely. And so what age group, what type of patient are you typically seeing with this?
So there's kind of two groups of people, I'd say, and it's anywhere from the young, and sometimes high level, but even weekend, athletes that are, high school, college, professional, or, think they're a professional that are younger and have, the more acute kind of injuries. They might have rotator cuff tears. They might have meniscus tears, labral injuries, bulging discs, pinched nerves, those kind of things. And there's kind of another population where as people get older, wear and tear tends to progress over time, whether or not you ever had surgery or whether or not you had steroid injections. those things could exacerbate and speed up that degenerative process. And there's several studies that support that. So that older population, which unfortunately sometimes is mid 40s to 50s, all the way up to 80s, and I've had a handful of patients into their young 90s that we've treated for some different issues, and they can do very well as well. It's kind of a different problem, and the way that we approach it might be a little bit different, but using the same types of injections that we've been talking about.
Wow. Okay. Now, so when you say the younger generation here, I assume that can be anywhere from what, 15? What age can you start doing stem cell sort of treatment?
I mean, so honestly, with patients when they're in their teens and they're really young, our bodies are really good at healing.
Right.
So oftentimes you don't have to do a stem cell procedure. You can actually do something called PRP, which is platelet-rich plasma. And that's basically taking the growth factors and the healing stimulus that is floating around our blood and dealing with, you know, small injuries all the time. You can use that, and it really stimulates the local stem cells that are in an area, and that can help those areas to recover without having to go to a stem cell procedure. You know, as injuries get bigger, as damage gets to be more advanced, that's oftentimes when the stem cells are a more appropriate option. But yeah, I see patients occasionally in their teens, a lot of 20 and 30 year olds, a lot of guys, you know, in their 30s and 40s, guys and girls that, you know, that nagging back injury just keeps coming back more and more and just doesn't want to go away. And then that, you know, lingering knee issue that off and on, and then it just, you know, again, it kind of sticks around more than you want. That kind of middle age where we're sort of getting into is a pretty common population where we've been beating our bodies up and we're starting to lose some of that ability to heal the way that we used to. We're not bouncing back the same way that you did when you were 18 to 25.
Yeah. Well, you keep mentioning these older ages here, and I'm 25 years old and I'm having the back problems as you're a little bit familiar with. Yeah. I've mentioned on a couple of other episodes, a herniated L5-S1 and L3-L4. And so, yeah, I know all about the bulging disc, the herniated disc, back pain. And it's something that, you know, I think here in the near future, I will actually be going to Dr. Darrington for, to actually get this thing healed up, because my sister and her new boyfriend are lifting with me now, and I'm realizing how out of shape I am. So it's something that I think I'm going to need to come join you for.
That's funny. Yeah, we can, that's a great thing. And you're in that age range still where people usually have the less advanced issues and typically bounce back very well. Not to say that older people don't, but it can be a little more complex. So I just got off the phone with a guy that's about your age, similar kind of back issues, and 2 months out, he's feeling great.
See, that's amazing to me. Like I keep saying, and I've struggled with this for a long time. It's, I think 16 is the first time that I threw out my back. They don't know if it was herniated at that time or not, but that's the first time that actually the injury happened. And then it became a focus on my shoulder. And so, I mean, the whole thing at this age, I'm starting to think that it might be a young enough age to heal it and a time to do it, because the older I get, as you're saying, the harder it is, the more complex it gets to actually heal itself.
Can be, yeah, but I don't want to take away, and we've got, you know, like I said, with our research data, we actually published a paper several years ago focusing on knee arthritis and looking at different factors on who tended to do better. And this is based on our registry data for, I think the study looked at several thousand patients, 4,000 patients or so. And age didn't really matter. The severity of the arthritis actually didn't matter. The gender didn't matter, although women did slightly better, but it wasn't statistically significant.
Wow.
The biggest factor in that research was how many cells we were actually able to get when we were doing a stem cell procedure. So there's things that a patient can do from, you know, general health and wellness, to have more stem cells, to increase that stem cell number. But there's things that I do from a procedural standpoint that can increase the number of stem cells that I'm able to withdraw from the patient. And then I have a lab person who actually does what we call manual processing, which helps get more of those stem cells than a kit can get. And, you know, one thing that people may not realize is, you know, there's several different, actually there's probably dozens of companies that have basically kits that in a pretty automated fashion will take whole bone marrow or they'll take blood and they'll spin it down, and inside their special tubing will concentrate those and separate and isolate the cells that you want from the cells that you don't want. But when you have someone who does it by hand, like we do, you're able to get higher numbers. You're able to get better concentration. You're able to better separate the things that you want in the butt, in the bone marrow or in the blood from the things that you don't want. And that can make a big difference. And as our research showed, having those more numbers plus injecting them very precisely using image guidance made a difference. So those are important things to be, you know, considering as you're looking at, you know, what are my options and what should I be getting injected and by whom?
Absolutely. And you mentioned earlier on the PRP side, you said that you can get a lot more stem cells in an area. It's almost so much so that you can, I think you mentioned with kids, that you can get enough stem cells to heal itself. Do you ever use PRP in an area to, in order to like stimulate the stem cells, and then pull them from that area in order to get more from your person in the lab?
Well, so a couple of points to clarify, I guess. So we've got stem cells floating around our body all the time. We've got them in our bone marrow that are basically a reservoir for those stem cells. And when our body senses an injury, it'll mobilize those. It'll move them around and it'll send them to that area. You know, in areas like our knees, you know, have a good population of stem cells normally. Our shoulders, rotator cuffs, all these different orthopedic areas have stem cells in them. But as things get older and as things progress, those stem cell numbers can go down. So in an arthritic knee, those stem cell numbers are less. In a torn rotator cuff tendon, those stem cell numbers are less than what they would be in a healthy tendon. But one of the good things is that the relative number of stem cells in the bone marrow remains fairly consistent. So if you can take a high population of stem cells from one place and do a really good job of extracting and isolating as many of those as possible and put them into an area that doesn't have as many stem cells because of, you know, the injury that's there, that can just increase that chance of healing that much better. So if you've got an earlier problem and you have more of those stem cells that are still in that area, PRP can work almost like an espresso shot to kind of wake those stem cells up and get them moving again and help that area to heal. And again, if it's a more advanced problem, that's where transplanting those stem cells into an area where those numbers have gone relatively down can really be effective.
Okay. So we're looking at two completely different procedures altogether with PRP and what you'd be trying to do in order to stimulate the stem cells, like to get more.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot of nuances in this. It's not it's something that, I've been doing this full time for 4 years. I spent an entire residency and then a fellowship focused on this kind of work. And I've attended several conferences and training, and I actually teach at the Interventional Orthopedic Foundation right now that basically does this education for the new line of doctors. And sometimes it's young guys that are just coming out, or sometimes it's older docs that have been doing other kinds of work and getting frustrated with, you know, their patient outcomes and constantly having to refill, you know, pain medications and see, you know, as much as you're busy doing steroid injections over and over, you see how those patients aren't doing as well, you know, with repeated injections. So I'm helping to educate those doctors that are interested in getting more into this field and doing it well, you know, not just doing it, you know, at a very basic level, but at a high level that, can lead to the kinds of outcomes that we're reporting.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Darrington, I really appreciate you coming on today. You know, I think that I definitely learned a lot in terms of stem cells, and my perspective on them every time I talk to you changes because you educate me more and more every time. But I think it's important not only for myself, but everybody listening to really take to heart the research and the amount of time that you put in order to get to where you're at, and also the research they need to do in order to find somebody who's actually educated enough and put in the same amount of time to treat them. So I really appreciate it. If you have anything that you want to let everybody know before we wrap things up here, what do you got for us?
Excellent. Well, again, thanks for having me on, Spence. This has been fun. I'm glad you learned something. you know, as I mentioned before, you know, there's different ways to get a hold of me. Website, DarringtonOrtho.com, on Facebook and on Instagram. You can message me at SoCalStemCellDoc. You know, and I have patients that come across my profiles that live all over the country, and they'll, you know, message me with questions, and I'm happy to answer those questions and help them at least get into the hands of a well-qualified person, even if they can't come see me. You know, because as much as I'd like to directly treat, you know, all those people, you know, if I can get them in the hands of someone that's qualified and can do similar level work as me, you know, them having a good outcome is really the important thing. So if anybody has questions at all, you know, please reach out. I'm happy to answer those as best I can, you know, from the remote with the limited information. But if I can get you directed in the right way, I think that's going to be helpful for you.
Awesome. Well, hey, thank you very much. I appreciate you stopping by today. And for everyone listening, thank you so much. And have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thanks, Spence.